You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Wednesday and welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, I'm one of the hosts of this lovely show, Tony East. I cover the Pacers for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News. Today, the Pacers have a game against the Minnesota Timberwolves. And guess what they have on Friday? A game against the Minnesota Timberwolves. So we should talk some Timberwolves, shouldn't we? And I have someone here to help me do that, recommended to me, actually, from another Timberwolves writer. So you must be very esteemed, the lovely Dane Moore, who covers the Timberwolves for Zone Coverage in Minnesota. Dane, how are you, man?
What's up, dude? Thanks for having me.
I'm really excited to talk about the Timberwolves because they have an Indy native in Jeff Teague. They have an IU legend in Noah Vonleh. This is a great team, isn't it?
I forgot about the Noah Vonleh. And, you know, you forget about the hometown, all that sort of stuff, but those connections matter.
They do matter. Vonleh, man, I believed in him way more than he turned out to be. But that's okay. I think I have to skip all the fun Indy stuff, though, and ask a lame, important question first. Is Karl Anthony Towns going to play? I hear he's coming back soon.
Yeah, well, it's been a really weird process. He's been out for exactly a month now, which, you know, he was just listed right away as day-to-day, and then it was questionable. And it's in the Minnesota fan base, it's been kind of frustrating for the fans of, like, what is actually going on here? And it's just been – it's been an injury that's taken longer for him to recover from than they expected. And they wanted him, you know, naturally to be 100% before he came back. So he was – he was physically with his knee back, ready to go this past Saturday when they're in Houston, but he is now very sick.
Oh,
so that is a new wrinkle in this weird cat injury process. So I don't know. The Wolves have been decimated by illnesses this year. This flu has been going around for so long. What we've seen, you know, I don't know if it's the same strain of the flu or strain, however you say that, but what's happened with Andrew Wiggins missed four straight games. I think that's 2 weeks ago with the same thing. And he's been really bad since coming back. Looks noticeably thinner, like lingering effects of illnesses.
Wow.
You know, unlike Malcolm Brogdon last night, who kind of came back and looked to be somewhat himself. You know, it's lingered. So I don't know if Karl Anthony Towns is going to play, but if he does play, I would bet a lot that you're not going to get the version of Karl Anthony Towns that was really rolling before he went down with this knee injury on December 13th.
Yeah, especially if he's sick. Brogdon had that strep thing, and I had a guy on Twitter reply to me and be like, because he was questionable like 3 days after it was announced he had strep, and someone was like, how is this possible? Like, has he heard of antibiotics? I was like, are you kidding me? Do you think the Pacers haven't heard of antibiotics? It was quite
But it is ridiculous. I mean, when it just goes around the whole team and you're like, did people get flu shots? But yes, I don't know. I don't know what the deal is, but maybe has it been a thing all the way around the league? It's for sure been a thing in Minnesota this year.
No, not really. Brogdon's the first I can recall. Last year, the Pacers had this thing, actually mainly just Sabonis, where guys would eat like bad fish and have food poisoning.
Great.
So I don't think they're going to do that in Minnesota. Well, if Towns does play, you know, big if there, possibly big if. I'm sure we'll see him in one of the games, so this is still valuable. He was amazing before he got hurt, correct?
Yeah, I mean, he was offensively dominant. They've really, if your listeners haven't been and watched the Timberwolves this year because I haven't played the Pacers, the offense has totally changed to like a 5-out set that Ryan Saunders has put in this year that basically asked Karl Anthony Towns to take like 9 threes a game. And he is the best big man shooter in the NBA. I was shooting well over 40% on that volume. So the offense was dynamic. His offense was dynamic. What's been really weird since he went out is that the defense, I don't know if it's been weird because Karl has never really been a great defender, but the defense has been really good this month without him for a long time up to this weekend. Like for a month, they were the number one defense in the NBA, and that's all with Kat sidelined. So that's the big question in Minnesota is like, okay, is this defense sustainable when Kat comes in, or is he just going to be a problem? And so that's what we're looking at kind of on our side of the ball, which is less like playoff focused, I guess you could put it like that, future focused.
Yeah, man, it always is weird with me with Cats defense because it just seems like you should be good, and I know a lot of it's effort because he always has so many good defensive flashes that it's frustrating. But Gorgui Yang has stepped right up, so who cares?
I think it's discipline more than effort for him, and particularly, you know, in the sort of drop scheme that they run when you're playing. There's so many different things as the five you have to do against a pick and roll in that sort of setting, and so if you stray away from playing that role discipline, it's just really easy for breakdowns to happen that lead to, you know, wide open corner threes. And that's been the story in a nutshell with Cat, is a guy starts beating them in pick and roll and he goes into like savior mode and it just hurts the defense even more. Gorgui Jang is not that. He's definitively a disciplined defender. He's a really good communicator. So he's just kind of in the way. And that's kind of been all they've needed. So hopefully, and Ryan Saunders has said they've said, you know, Cat, look at what Gorgui's been doing, or even Noah Vonleh's been doing when he's been in, that this is why the defense has been solid, because the five is just such an important piece to all defenses, but particularly the Timberwolves scheme.
Can you imagine being a superstar and your coach says, hey, see that guy playing 12 minutes a game? Do that.
Hey, at some point, you know, I mean, it's literally every single year of Karl-Anthony Towns' career, the Timberwolves' defensive rating has been better with him off the floor than on the floor. So this isn't just like some pet stat narrative where this is his fifth year in the league, and it's more egregious than it's ever been. So I don't know. At some point, he just does have to go back to basics and be like, yeah, just try and be Gorgui Jang defensively, and that will make a big difference for you and for this team. And I mean, it's what holds the Timberwolves back from stepping up into, you know, the next caliber. The offense has always been good. They've always been a good offensive team since Cat's been on the Wolves. It's that they've been atrocious defensively, you know, bottom five in defense every year of his career. So it matters. It really does matter to this team.
Yeah, it totally does. And the Pacers like to play in the post and pick on those kind of guys. But at the same time, I think he would guard Turner, and that would be negated to an extent. So the Timberwolves have other players that we need to talk about. But I want to tell you something interesting about this Pacers-Timberwolves matchup that's tonight. You know the last time the Pacers played in Minnesota, Jimmy Butler was on the Timberwolves?
Is that true? Yeah,
that blew my mind.
It feels like 5 years ago.
I know. It's two teams ago, so it just sounds like it's a lie.
it's nice that he's gone, but they win less without him. That makes sense.
Yes, getting you to the playoffs I'm sure was fun, even though it didn't go super well. So you mentioned Wiggins earlier, even though it was mostly to just tell me he had the flu recently, but I know early in the year there was a lot of buzz about, oh my gosh, like Andrew Wiggins is shooting from better spots and look at this smooth thing he's doing here, and oh my gosh, he's not averaging a terrible assist thing. Like, is that maintained? Is Wiggins still this awesome, like actually useful offensive player this year?
So Wiggins has been most hit by this illness thing. He's been out with quote unquote illness twice. So he's been back for five games now, and he's been awful since returning from missing four straight games with an illness. But earlier in the year, he missed a three-game stint. His grandma passed away, and then he got the flu from his toddler, taking care of his toddler daughter. So that was the turning point, was when he got sick for that first time. He was in that great rhythm in November, and then it really did take him out of it. His like production has reverted. I don't think it's like fair to say that he's gone back to, you know, the things that were so killer for him before, which was just the real wild propensity to rely on the mid-range game. He does try and attack the rim much more. He's shooting more threes, you know, more modern style. But the problem is teams have really adjusted to like, oh, the only two people we have to care about defensively are Cat and Wiggins. We can leave everyone else open. It makes it really hard for Wiggins to, you know, need to get through like three guys to get to the rim. So it's been a product of him losing his rhythm and just kind of the book being out on what the Wolves offense is that has really slowed down Andrew's production lately.
Hey, everybody. Want to take a quick break here to talk to you guys about Echelon. If you're like me, you are spending the beginning of 2020, and hopefully more of it than just the beginning, trying to get fit, get back in shape, get your body back and right after a horrible eating month of December. And a great way to do that is with Echelon. So if you go to echelonfit.com, you can discover their EX1 connected fitness spikes. They offer a high-quality at-home cycling experience at less than half the price of those Pelotons. They have daily live studio classes on a nice screen. They make beautifully engineered products that are customized for everybody. You'll love it. And if you're not 100% satisfied with your Echelon, they'll give you your money back. How great is that? Don't pay a ton for a Peloton. Buy an Echelon bike today for under $1,000. Go to echelonfit.com/LONBA to learn about their limited time free Apple iPad and complete details of this exclusive offer. Echelon, it's your time. That's Echelon, E-C-H-E-L-O-N, fit.com/LONBA, echelonfit.com/LONBA to get yours.
Well, that's just poor use of Jeff Teague, right? I'm just kidding. And I gotta defend the guy. I know that he is underwhelming and no one wants him on the team anymore. And he's pretty much only good on offense at being a ball handler with a screen. But I gotta defend my indie guys.
Yeah, you know, it's weird because I talk about how there's just no other offense on the team outside of Wiggins and Towns. And, like, in theory, Jeff Teague is the third best offensive player on this team.
I'd love to hear that.
But
music to my ears.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, he can create. He's a decent shooter when he chooses to shoot. But what is just so killer is they're trying to play this, again, like I was saying, this five-out set, and they're trying to play with pace. And they're trying to shoot threes, and Jeff Teague doesn't like to do any of those things. So he's so counter to the whole direction the team is moving that it just really throws things off. He's been moved into a backup role, but because, again, they're just so devoid of talent, he plays a lot. And when he plays, the team has not been successful for the last, you know, month plus now.
Former All-Star Jeff Teague. Isn't that crazy?
Was he the fourth All-Star on the Hawks, or was Korver the fourth? I think it was Korver,
but who cares? That was so dumb. Who's a dumber All-Star, Jeff Teague that year or Jameer Nelson on the 2008 Magic?
Wow, Jameer Nelson. Yeah, that was the East. See, you guys just, you have it good in the East. It's just, life is easier, you know?
If you're a top five East team, you're guaranteed an All-Star. Like, it does not matter how great any player on your team is. You're just, like, guaranteed one All-Star.
Well, it's like the, you know, D'Angelo Russell's name has been, you know, bantied about a million different ways to Minnesota.
Former All-Star D'Angelo Russell, right?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. But not only was he an Eastern Conference All-Star, he was an injury replacement All-Star.
We do not talk about why he was an injury replacement on this show.
Oh.
How dare you be searched out on this show. Yes. We are now going to have to cut this short, guys. Just kidding. Yeah, it's a shame for Teague. And it's not a shame for Teague. I'm sure the five-out system is better for the Wolves and especially Towns. And that's who you want it to be better for. And obviously, as a big Robert Covington fan, you know, I know it works for him to be able to shoot more. The spread lets Wiggins get to although you're saying now that people are overloading Wiggins, but like in theory, it should help him more. Like it seems it should be more beneficial. But for Teague, it appears not to be the case. And he might be struggling to. You know, I don't think he'll be out of the league next year necessarily, but he might be struggling to find a heavy minute spot for himself next year because he's not really shown a ton of plus stuff with the Timberwolves.
He just needs to go to an old school team. That's why I think he's just gonna he'll eventually be bought out. The Lakers. I think he's gonna go to the Lakers. That's what I
wow.
that would be my guess.
I would love that.
Is just yeah. I think in like the Rondo role, I think he can be fine.
Was Teague the guy you wanted that summer where there were like 7,000 B-list point guards available?
Nope. I wanted, actually, former Indiana Pacer, now retired Indiana Pacer, Darren Collison.
Ooh. He was great for the Pacers.
He was. And it was only a two-year deal rather than – and it was like for half as much as Teague. I thought that would be you know, an interesting fit there. There's also like George Hill and Drew Holiday were out that year, but the Wolves got Jeff Teague to a 3-year, $57 million contract that is certainly no longer worth it. Maybe that first year when Jimmy came and when Taj was here, he was, you know, decent. But yeah, I mean, he's just a Tibbs guy. You know, he was brought in to play that style. That's what style he's better at. And, you know, he's dealt with injuries he's getting older. He doesn't fit the modern NBA as well. And, you know, like the Wolves are trying to be as quote unquote modern as possible. So it's just a bad fit.
That's a bummer, but I understand how that happens. Yeah. Third. And I saw when for some research before this, third in the league in 3-point attempts per game. Gerson's really coming in with that. He's swinging with that Houston effect for this team.
It's funny. His like introductory press conference, he opened up with, "This is not going to be Houston North." And then it's pretty much Houston North.
It's hard to be Houston when you don't have James Harden, though.
Well, they got Cat, man. It's like
that's true.
it kind of comes together in that sort of way. Super.
What's that record with Cat this year? Do you have that off the top of your head?
Okay. So I think 10-15. Not very good. They were 10-8.
That's good.
And they were 7-4. Then they were 10-8. You know, they were legit. You know, a good team to start the year. But then they went on this 11-game losing streak to start December, 7 of which were with Cat. Then Cat gets hurt. They lose 4 more. So the problems are not just that Cat has been injured for a month. Like it was dipping before he got hurt because the defense wasn't up to snuff. And again, nobody was – he had very little offensive help around him. So it was they just need a lot more to surround him.
Yeah, and something I notice personally – I haven't caught a ton of Timberwolves, admittedly, so I might be off base here, but I am. I'm going to put myself out there and try. Teague can kind of create for others. I talked about that, and I've seen him play a bunch anyway. But, like, it seems like with Cat out there, they don't have a guy who can set someone else up really well. You know, Napier's okay at it, but like Okogie can't really pass. He's young. Culver is a rookie. Like, he's learning to read the game. And I actually like Jarrett Culver. He's been pretty good. Jake Layman plays a lot. Don't ask him to pass the ball ever. Covington, same thing. It's like they just can't really set someone else up for, you know, if they're going to be spread, they can't really set someone else up for a good look from three as often as they'd like. And that's where I feel like they've been kind of stuck when I've caught them every once in a while.
No, I think that's totally accurate. I think that was part of the intrigue of the idea of pursuing D'Angelo Russell, was to have that lead ball handler who can both score and distribute some. And, you know, instead, they started Teague at the beginning of the year. Teague missed some time. He also had an illness. And then kind of it was Point Wiggins. And that was frisky for a while. But he isn't your typical creator for others. He rejects screens a bunch. Rather than like getting to the nail and distributing, he's like more want to take a floater from that area. So he's like, they have a bunch of guys, I can put it like this, who are like, could be, you know, secondary ball handlers, you know, a side pick and roll, him, Jarrett Culver, you know, and then Napier, Teague, whatever, but they lack that true point guard. And so really when Cat is there, the offense is just kind of Cat standing at the top of the key, like as the quarterback, and, you know, dictating the offense based on how they decide to defend him. So yeah, this team does absolutely lack a true, like, distributing lead ball handler.
Man, is that Russell stuff going to happen, or is that over now? Is that dream dead?
Yeah, I think, in ways, I'm very skeptical of how that fit would have ever worked because of the defense, but it kind of, you know, made sense in the summer because the Nets weren't going to bring back D'Angelo Russell because they were bringing in Kyrie and KD. So there was this window where a pretty good injury replacement all-star point guard was out on the market to be had. So it made sense, I thought, for them to pursue him Now it gets, you know, a lot more complicated where you would need to send out matching salary to acquire Russell in some sort of deal. And the issue with that is the Wolves' expensive players outside of Towns are Andrew Wiggins and Gorgui Dieng, and neither of them are viewed as really plus assets. So then you start being like, okay, what else do we have to attach to get, you know, to get Russell, to make it match up value wise? And you start talking about the sixth overall pick, Jarrett Culver, Robert Covington, who's on a great contract himself. And then you just go, well, even if they got him, what would even be left building for the future? So
right.
I would be, this front office is going to be aggressive pursuing high end talent. But at the same time, it's got to be like in one of those windows where Russell or player X is being, you know, pushed out the door to some degree.
Yeah, and they can swing him for cheaper. That makes sense to me.
Can I ask you a question?
You can. That's what podcasts are all about.
So, you know, just as we do in Timberwolves world, it's like the idea is, and I do feel confident about this, that they are going to try and pursue a young talent. And a lot of people have talked about that, you know, being a lead ball handler, whether that's Russell or Bradley Beal. You know what I'm saying?
I see where we're going.
And then, you know, so it's only natural to, if you like expand your bandwidth out to not guards, to look at somebody like Miles Turner. And I guess that's the question I have on the Timberwolves side is how would that fit with Cat if in some world a trade was put together? But then probably the more important side to, you know, dig into what the reality of that would look like is what would Indiana be desiring in return for him if he was to be somebody who was moved?
So the first part of that, he really struggled at first this year. Like, he played with Sabonis in spurts last year, but not enough that anyone could be like, oh, I know exactly how to read this situation. But this year they play 15 minutes a game, a little more than that per game together, which is a lot. And at first, Turner did not fit well with that, right? He started off the year okay and then got hurt. And when he came back, he was just terrible for a little over 10 games. And then, you know, McMillan and him had this like long talk about, okay, I've got to figure out how to use you better and all this stuff. And now they've got him set a few more screens. He's popping better. He's getting to the right spots. He's not overlapping with Sabonis's key areas as a usage guy as much. And he's really doing well. And they're letting him put together two dribble moves every game, which are always nice and throw off the defense. And he's obviously a great shooter. So now he is playing a lot better alongside another big. And I say all that to get to your Timberwolves question of, yeah, he probably, I mean, I think anyone could fit with Cat. He's amazing. But just as a, like, he's not quite secondary ball handler levels, but he, you know, he mostly when he's the solo center, this year you see him break these out, but he puts together a two or three dribble move every once in a while, and he can easily shoot over smaller guys. So I think that fit would be fine. The trouble is the second part of the question you asked me. A lot of fake trades for Turner I see are because he's young, come from a team that is also like the Wizards. I see a lot of Wizards Twitter mm-hmm. trying to get him, and it's like they'll give the Pacers a pick and a young player, and okay, well, the Pacers don't want young players. They're good right now, and their entire core is 24 to 27 years old. Like, they want good players in that range and obviously the assets to make it worth it for them. And a lot of teams don't necessarily have that. Like, Covington is close. He's a little on the old side, but I'm not going to – like, Robert Covington's game is barely going to age, right? He doesn't run that much except for on defense. But outside of him, the Timberwolves can't really meet that without sending back some atrocious salary, or, you know, they're not willing to part with Culver or their high picks or anything. So that's where it's really
hard. I don't know if that part's true.
Ooh. Well, but then again, yeah, like, Culver's outside the part I just said, though, where it's like he's so young – that he doesn't set back their window, but he doesn't, you know, he's not like helpful in the times they'll need him to be.
But I guess the question then is how much does Covington improve the window, or are the Pacers better if they just put Covington in place of Turner?
Probably not.
Yeah.
They're like plus 7 points per 100 possessions with Turner and Sabonis right now. It's hard for that to get better without like Klay Thompson. Not that would ever happen, but you know, a really good four or a really good wing like shooter. It's really hard to find the right move for him right now. So as much
you're
like the fourth team that's had something on him. So I'm really curious about, you know, what people think is the right offer for him.
Yeah. I mean, for me, what I'll say about Robert Cuffington is, you know, how it's just different when you're watching a player every single day rather right. than somebody who plays in the opposite conference. And obviously I'd watched Cuffington play with the Sixers and was well aware that he'd made the all defensive team and he was this really good defensive player. But I do think up close and in person every day, you see that value more. Now, I'm not saying that makes him better than Turner, or that it would be better than the +7 that it would be with Turner. But I think there's a chance that could be really interesting in the Indiana's landscape. But I also think Robert Covington is very interesting in the current Timberwolves landscape, that he makes a lot of sense next to Karl Anthony Towns, just like he would make a lot of sense next to DeMontis Sabonis. So that's the issue.
Covington fits everywhere, right? That's part of why he's so awesome.
Yes, exactly. And what he's now shown that I think would be uniquely interesting to Indiana is this season he's playing power forward after. I mean, he kind of played power forward right when he came up in Philly, but mostly he was a three, you know. And he's pretty much exclusively like a real big this year. I mean, a stretch big on offense. But he does acquit himself well at that position. He's not the Pacers would lose a lot of rim defense replacing, you know, if you take Turner out, of course you would. But you would get substantially better defending the perimeter. And I don't watch enough Pacers to know what the opportunity cost calculation of that would be. But to me, I mean, in all seriousness, and I know we have these fake trade conversations all the time, but it's one that I do think is legitimately interesting and in ways does make some sense for both teams if the surrounding assets on the margins were able to be balanced. And maybe that's just what totally breaks it down is, like you said, what is Culver to Indiana? Like, he can't shoot. He's a couple years away from maybe being a good player. So that is maybe where it breaks down. But just in a Covington-Turner vacuum, I don't think it's that terrible.
I really like Robert Covington. I'm not going to shrug that off, but...
Well, it'd be cool. You get to watch him play for two games in a row. Do you like it when the Pacers play the same team back-to-back?
This is the first time it's happened to them this year, and no, I hate this. This is stupid. So
I think you can go two ways with it.
I kind of have a comparison, actually. So they played the Pistons three times in their first, like, 10 games, and Blake missed all three of them. So, like, and they actually lost two of the three, but... You look at that and you're like, this is not a representation of what the Pistons are. Like, this is crap scheduling. And so on the off chance the Cat misses both of these games, you know, like, what a huge advantage for the Pacers that they didn't have to play Cat. And if you're a fan who wanted to watch Cat, tough shit. Like, you happen to play them twice in January. Like, I kind of hate it.
Yeah, that part of it is totally fair. I guess the Wolves played – what I'm thinking of is the Wolves played the Jazz – and the same thing on Wednesday and a Friday, like once in Utah, once back in Minnesota, back to back. And it was, that one was like particularly interesting given the Gobert Towns matchup and how Towns just plays out on the perimeter, which just totally drags Gobert away from doing what he does best. And Cat was like 7 of 10 from three in that game and really gave the Jazz problems. So it was interesting going into Friday being like, you know, what's the chess move here?
Right.
Do you continue to have Gobert, you know, play him on the perimeter? Do you go with somebody a lot smaller to just kind of press up on him on the perimeter? And I think the Timberwolves' assumption was that they would make a change because they did late in the fourth quarter of the game that the Wolves won. And it was cool that the Jazz didn't, but they just had Gobert for the first time I'd ever really seen, you know, face guard somebody. And he was all the way out on Cat on the perimeter. And it totally threw Cat for a loop. And he had like 10 points in that game after having 21 points just off of threes, you know, 2 days prior. So for somebody who covers a team that never goes to the playoffs, to me, it's cool to see like some of that playoff chess game between the coaches. And I don't know to what extent, particularly if Cat doesn't play, if we'll see that this week in Indiana. But I do like that element of it.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because when you were answering, I was thinking about bringing this part of the story up. So I talked to Al Horford earlier this year. He did awesome defending the Pacers in the playoffs last year when he was on the Celtics. And this is kind of a dumb way to ask this, but I said, like, how the hell were you so good at stopping Sabonis? Like, no one else has ever done that well, containing him in the post. And he said, and making me feel like an idiot, well, we had time to study one team, so I studied one team. And I, okay, yes, that makes sense. So I wonder, in the regular season, you don't have that, right? You play every other day or 2 days in between. You can't majorly adjust like you can in a series. So I do wonder if the pros of this game are, you can adjust in between and you can prepare really heavily for something you're about to see twice in 3 days. That is a good point.
I asked the Quinn Snyder and Ryan Saunders about that too. And that was essentially the same thing they said of like, yeah, it is very different from like a game planning standpoint, whether it be their scouts or that. I mean, they have, the Wolves played on Monday, just like the Pacers played on Monday. And now the rest of your week is literally just Indiana or Minnesota.
It's true.
So you can, I don't know, you can, from a coaching perspective or from a study perspective, like Orfer said, I think you can put a lot more into it.
Yeah, I'll have to ask Dan on Friday. But you might have helped me find a story here. Thanks, Dane. Thanks. Thanks for coming on my show and helping me out here. All right. So one more kind of very general question involving a lot of Timberwolves players. So they've been sick, obviously. So this is like the bad way of leaning into this. But, even just on Basketball Reference, they have so many guys who have double-digit starts, right? Are they really a deep team, do they play nine guys and they kind of have a weak bench just full of guys who have had to play?
The latter.
Okay.
I mean,
unfortunate.
It's a roster. It's a roster that is disproportionate to what they need. I mean, even with Cat out, they've had this problem this month of having four centers that they want to play. Between Gorgui Dieng, Noah Vonleh, Naz Reid has come up, and then Jordan Bell was playing, before Cat went down too. So they've kind of gone to this thing where now Jordan Bell is out of the rotation, and they'll just go 6 minutes at a time of Dieng, 6 minutes of Vonleh, 6 minutes of Reid, and they'll just kind of cycle it all the way through. So there's been no consistency to like roles, and now Reid is up and he shoots a million threes. It'd be interesting to see if the Pacers actually guard him. He like has twice as many three times as many 3-point attempts as rebounds this season. And they just have a bunch of like players who are good at like one thing and bad at pretty much everything else. So it kind of goes like game to game, depending on who's healthy and what the like opponent has to offer. What I'll be interested in this Indiana matchup is how the Wolves have pretty much all year like strayed away from playing two traditional bigs. Like I was saying, Covington plays the four, and when he's out, then it was Jake Layman, and now it's Kata Bates-Diop who is in, and those are just undersized fours. But if you're going up against Turner and Sabonis, or that's how Patadze played in the last game, like how they handle that physicality it shouldn't be a problem for this team. Cause like I said, they have all these big guys who are big at least, but given this Wolves system that is so perimeter oriented, they want to play small. So it's just it just ends up leading to a mess in terms of rotations.
Well, that is unfortunate. TJ McConnell will pick you to death then. That is what's going on.
I turned on the Pacers game last night. And he was mic'd up. I was like, this is awesome.
He was fantastic. I normally hate those kind of things because normally it's just like them clapping and like egging on their teammates. But McConnell was actually like saying funny stuff and being entertaining.
You knew he was going to be funny too. You're like, oh, I'm excited for this.
So non-related to this matchup questions. We already talked about indie man Jeff Teague. So selfishly, I want to know more about IU man Noah Vonleh, because there was a hot second after I believe he was on the Bulls at the beginning. Man, that's how unmemorable his time there was. I don't even remember his first team, but the thought was going to be he was out of the league, and then the Knicks kind of saved him. Is he playing better this year, or is he just, you know, I see he's not playing much.
I have been so shocked by Noah Vonleh. And once the Wolves signed him, went back and watched a good amount of his Knicks tape from last year, and his style of play just screamed selfish. He was just bombing away from top of the key and isolating from top of the key. And I was like, how in the world is this going to fit on, you know, this Wolves team? And he was offered a multi-year deal from the Wolves, and he took a 1-year, $2 million deal to bet on himself to, you know, so it's all these things that are leading me to say, you know, he's just going to try and get some stats this year and then go out on the market this summer to get a, you know, bigger, better deal. And the opposite of everything I thought couldn't be more true, where he's just been like the quintessential role player and is just doing exactly what he's asked. And he's been very good in pick and roll coverage, dropping back and defending the rim. He is not a big part of the offense at all and seems super content with that. He's a great communicator defensively. Appears to watch a ton of film, calling out, you know, you can, when you're at the game, you can hear him calling out opponents' plays. So he fits terribly in this roster, like I was saying before, because they have a million centers. But he's a guy who I think could go to a team at the trade deadline and be like a ninth man or something. That would be a legitimately interesting piece on a good team. He's actually really impressed me, even though the minute volume hasn't been high.
Yeah, 61.1 true shooting also jumps out to me. But I know he shoots like
he stopped inside. Shooting threes.
He shoots 10 feet in, basically, right?
Which is, you know, it's fine. That's what I'm saying. He's just like he does what he's supposed to do, and
right
on a bad team, you know, a lot of times guys don't do that.
Yeah, and then the final Indiana. You guys have so many Indiana connections here. Butler legend, Keelan Martin. I just said his name.
Keelan Martin, yeah.
I said it right the first time and decided to walk it back. I know he's on a two-way, hard to give those guys minutes, although I have seen quite a few little moments popping up from him.
He's been really good too, but he's on a two-way, so, and he's getting up there towards his 45 days.
Damn.
And the Wolves don't have like a roster spot to give him a guaranteed contract. So he's now this past like week and a half been back in Iowa with the G League team. But I think he started three games. He's really developed on the defensive side of the floor. He kind of came in as a spark plug offensive guy, but looked really lost defensively. I mean, he's taken strides and very much looks like an NBA player, which, you know, it's big. It's big for a team, particularly when you have two max contracts in Towns and Wiggins. To be able to find some guys on the cheap like that who can sign, you know, a multi-year deal at the minimum or something like that. So that's probably coming for him. If they are able to, I mean, if they do move Noah Vonleh or something to create a roster spot.
No. You got to keep both.
They have to. Yes. Okay. Maybe they move Trevion Graham. If they somehow create a roster spot, I think it's Keelan Martin's to have, because he's been, he fits what they want to do. He has, it's kind of sad to say, I think he might, of all of the wings and guards, be the best shooter on the roster. Wow. And he showed a little bit of like an off the dribble floater game too. So he just really does look like an NBA player, and he kind of saw it right away in summer league. Like he played, he was super confident there, you know, stepping into his shot, and like he's just like one of those guys who you can tell like believes in his game and believes that he can, like, he's up to snuff with whatever the competition is. So I've been really impressed with his confidence, and then also just effectiveness as an offensive player and somebody who is now approaching solid defensively as opposed to terrible like it was in the beginning of the year. So yeah, another Indiana guy.
There we go. I love to hear that, and my Butler people also will. I've got nothing else, so I'm gonna do my least favorite part where I try to predict the games. If Cat plays in both games, I think the home team wins both times. If Cat plays in neither game, I think the Pacers win both times. And if Cat plays just the game in Indiana, I think the Pacers win both times. And that is my stance.
Yeah, no, that sounds fair. The only, and I mean, I would, because like I said, Cat will be coming back and I don't, you know, I don't know what version of him we'll get. I would bet on the Pacers winning both games. But what the Wolves do have is they are a bad three-point shooting team. And I think they're 29th in three-point percentage. But they shoot a ton of them. And from time to time, like once every blue moon, they have these games where they shoot 44 threes and they make 18 of them. And that, just on volume alone,
you just win,
makes them hard to beat. So it's like, I don't want to, like, that was always like the Rockets comparison in the playoffs where it's like, Daryl Morey is like, well, we just got to get hot in a 7-game series against the Warriors and we can beat them. Like, and like the Wolves have odd, like, tenets of that where, you know, if they do shoot 45% from three on high volume, I don't know if the Pacers offense will be able to keep pace with that in both games unless they're really going off themselves. And if the Wolves defense does remain solid as it has, I mean, actually remains really good, then I guess that's what I'm saying. That's how the Pacers lose one of these games, is if they allow the Wolves to get hot from three, because the Wolves will absolutely bomb threes at will.
Yeah, that's how the Pacers won in the Target Center 2 years ago when Corey Joseph, of all people, had 21 points and hit five threes. So there's your ball game. Corey Joseph hits five threes, you just win. You just win.
You know, if Cat doesn't play, they better get out on Naz Reid, because nobody gets out and guards him, and he shoots a three a minute, because he had 15 straight points in all on threes in like 8 minutes last night.
I actually did see the official NBA account tweeting about Naz Reid the other day. I was like, what?
It was weird. He just has no conscience and just fires away. So if you're relying on Naz Reid to beat the Pacers, you're probably not going to. But I'm just saying, if somehow the Pacers lose one of these games, that's probably what leads to it.
Well, that will do it. Dane, where can people follow you and all your work about the Timberwolves?
I'm on Twitter at Dane Moore NBA, and I write for a company called Zone Coverage Minnesota. And I have a podcast called the Dane Moore NBA Podcast, where if you're feeling Timberwolvesy, I do shows every Monday and Thursday for that. So, yeah, for Indiana people who do not listen to local Minneapolis radio, those would be the spots.
I don't know why. I can't believe none of my people listen to Minneapolis radio.
I can't believe anybody listens to radio anymore, but, you know, podcasts are the way to go.
Yeah, a big sports radio group that was amazing in Indy just got laid off today. It's a very, very sad time for Indy sports radio.
I saw you tweet that today. I'm sorry. This sports journalism world is brutal.
It sure is. You know, it's not brutal though. Basketball is great and fun. I'm looking forward to these two games against the Timberwolves. Everybody go follow Dane on Twitter for, of course, great Timberwolves coverage. And that team, you know, you need to keep up with that team, because Karl Anthony Towns is way better than anyone gives him credit for. Of course, you can follow this podcast at Locked On Pacers. Adam will be on tomorrow to recap all the action from this game. That's all we got for today's Locked On Pacers podcast, and we will see you guys tomorrow.